Hello, I'm Fiona McAleer.
And I'm Anne McLeaney. And welcome to day 7 of the Harvey Weinstein Trial Unfiltered, the daily podcast where we reenact verbatim testimony from the trial of Harvey Weinstein. So an interesting day today, Phelan.
Yes. The prosecution brought a couple of witnesses who they thought would bolster the allegations we heard yesterday of Tarali Wolf and Dawn Dunning. They both alleged they were sexually assaulted by Weinstein. Dawn Dunning also claimed she was later raped by Weinstein. I don't think the prosecution got what they were hoping from either witness today. I think they just didn't deliver what they really needed.
What they were hoping for.
Yeah.
So interestingly, Weinstein is not being charged with assaulting either of the women. They are what's known as these Molyneux witnesses who are there to show evidence of prior bad acts and predatory assault. The jury has to decide whether he sexually assaulted two women, raping one of them. Four other women are testifying that he attacked them.
Including Tarali Wolf and Dawn Dunning. They're one of these four other women. And the jury is just listening to these counts, but is actually not deciding on his guilt or innocence. They are all part of this predatory charge. So it's a strange situation.
Yeah, I think we're going to spend some more time talking about that, and not today, but I think it's an interesting legal situation. I mean, yeah. I talked to somebody about it today, and they were basically saying it's, you know, when you think about it, if you were charged with murder and you were in a court, they won't allow anything be brought in about, you know, prior assaults that you might have had, you know, because it would prejudice the jury. However, that seems to have been suspended in this case. But we're going to speak probably to a legal expert on that, because
yes.
I think it is an interesting one, and I think that actually this Molyneux rule looks like it goes back to the early part of the 1900s.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to dig into that.
So,
but
first today we heard from Lincoln Davies, the former fiancé of aspiring actress Dawn Dunning. Now, Dawn claims that Harvey Weinstein put his hand up her skirt violently in a hotel suite in Soho, New York, in 2004. Shortly after that, she agreed to meet him at the Intercontinental Hotel in Manhattan to discuss some film projects. It was there he made an indecent proposal.
He did.
Yes.
Yes, he said he would give her three contracts for three different movies if she agreed to a threesome with him and his assistant, Bonnie. I hadn't realised it was actually, you know, there's three. It's like, yeah, it's a three contracts for three movies if she agreed to a threesome with his assistant, Bonnie. So let's hear Lincoln Davies describe meeting Harvey Weinstein and the A-list parties he and Dawn Dunning were invited to.
And we should point out Lincoln is Australian.
So let's hear Lincoln Davies describe meeting Harvey Weinstein and the A-list parties he and Dawn Dunning were invited to.
He's been questioned by Assistant District Attorney Megan Hast. These are actors playing these people, and it's verbatim testimony. This is exactly as was said in the courtroom.
Do you know somebody named Harvey Weinstein?
No. I was introduced to him before, but at a premiere and stuff, but I don't really know him outside of that introduction.
Who introduced you to him?
Dawn.
When were you introduced to him?
It was at a movie premiere for one of his movies. I don't recollect what that actual movie was.
How did you end up at that movie premiere?
Via his invitation. I was the plus one.
The plus one for who?
Dawn.
Were you aware of Dawn's relationship with Harvey Weinstein at that time?
We've been to a couple of things. We had been to, like, the producers and stuff he got us tickets to or got her tickets to. That was one thing. Outside of that, there was a party, but I do not remember going, but definitely the one time with the producers. That was an event that we were invitees of his to.
Was Dawn pursuing acting at that time?
Yes.
So it was quite the exciting life for Miss Dunning, who was an aspiring actress. And as Mr. Davies was later to say, she was very excited that she was so close to such a major movie producer such as Harvey Weinstein. However, that all changed one evening after Dawn returned from a meeting where she was supposed to sign a contract with Mr. Weinstein. Let's hear Lincoln Davies describe how he remembered the evening. And we should say that although they were fiancés at the time, they're no longer together, having split up, I think, in 2008, 2009,
yeah.
Right?
So they were having quite the exciting life in New York back then. They were young and in love. And in fact, Miss Dunning gave a very full description of her life, especially when she met Harvey Weinstein. She was going to all the top parties. As she said, she got all the hottest tickets and he was making all the hottest movies.
Yeah, but actually time has certainly been kinder to Miss Dunning looks-wise and career-wise. Dunning, now 40, goes back and forth, as she says, between California and New York. She works as a costume and production designer, helping brands with their creative direction, while he told the court that he lives in Los Angeles and oversees restaurants, which I'm not sure what that means.
He didn't
exactly.
Go into, Mr. Davies, now, Lincoln didn't go into any details what overseeing restaurants means, whether it means he's overseeing four McDonald's or maybe he's overseeing an A-list restaurant, but definitely got the impression that her life had had gone in a better direction. So it was an exciting life. And as he said, you know, she was an aspiring actress.
And she was really happy and excited about this, her connection with...
Her proximity to Harvey Weinstein.
But that all changed, according to Mr. Davies. That all changed. And one evening after Dawn returned from a meeting where she was supposed to sign a contract with Mr. Weinstein. Let's hear now Lincoln Davies describe how he remembered that evening. And we should say that although they were fiancés back at that time, they're no longer together, having split up in, I think, 2008, 2009.
Yeah. So remember, this is actors rereading verbatim testimony. People have written and told us how much they love this podcast, how it really brings... It's the best way of finding out what's going on in the courtroom. So please, if you like it, give us a rating on podcasts. It's very important. It makes other people look at the podcast. It drives listeners. It's one way of making sure this story gets around the world. So please give us a rating. It's a huge help. So
write a comment. We read all the comments. So let's hear this exchange now between Megan Hast and Lincoln Davies about what happened on that fateful evening.
During the time you were living with Dawn in that 2004 period, do you recall a night Dawn returned home from a meeting with Harvey Weinstein?
Yes.
When you use the word dressing gown, can you describe what you mean by that?
Like a bathrobe.
Can you describe Dawn's affect and demeanor when she came home from that meeting?
She was pretty shocked, upset, angry, like kind of overall appalled, I would say.
And did she show any sort of physical emotion?
Yeah. Like it was an arc of emotion that was with the anger and stuff like that. But eventually, she just kind of like probably spoke about it for half an hour.
And at that meeting, did she tell you that Harvey Weinstein had met her at the door of a hotel room in a dressing gown?
Yes.
Do you recall about... How she was physically at that time?
She ended up crying.
After that time, did you go to any further Weinstein Company events?
No.
Did you ever see the defendant again?
No.
Sorry, did you ever see Harvey Weinstein again?
No.
Again, strong enough testimony, you know, firm enough, and backing up some of what Dawn Dunning had said in her testimony yesterday, but... Lincoln Davies' testimony had a few fatal weaknesses in that he couldn't remember the year or even the time of the year that these events happened. And he revealed, you know, even more importantly, he revealed that she had not told him about a very serious sexual assault that she had said had occurred before this meeting, where she alleges Harvey Weinstein put his hand up her skirt violently in a hotel suite in Soho, New York. So let's hear Damon Sharonis, Weinstein's very able defense lawyer, examine the weaknesses in Mr. Davies' evidence. And as you hear...
This is kind of funny, actually, because everyone got a kind of a shock, because as you hear, Mr. Davies is Australian, and he had a very relaxed attitude to his questioner. And he caught Mr. Sharonis somewhat off guard.
Because there's a lot of tension in the courtroom, and there's a lot of animosity between the witnesses and the lawyers. And this sort of caught Mr. Sharonis off guard. So let's hear... And it also, this questioning brought out something, Miss Dunning's very strong personality and how she had a take-no-prisoners attitude, which contradicts the prosecution's strategy and theory about this case. So let's hear that exchange.
Good morning, Mr. Davies.
How are you, mate?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thanks.
When did you meet Dawn Dunning?
Like late, very late 2000, early 2001.
I believe that you testified to an evening when Ms. Dunning came home and she was upset?
Yes.
About how long had you been dating her from the time you first met her until the time she came home upset?
3 or 4 years.
Did you live with her?
Yes.
When did you move in with Ms. Dunning?
Pretty quick. Probably within, like, maybe under a year.
And obviously you moved in with her. She was your girlfriend. You were very close with her.
Yes.
Strong-willed person, Ms. Dunning?
I would say so, yeah.
You say so. She does not take a lot of guff.
Depends on who it is coming from.
Okay, fair enough. Strong-willed with you.
Of course.
And Ms. Dunning worked at PM, and she also wanted to be an actress.
Uh-huh.
You have to say yes. Randy has to take this down. That was an aspiration of Ms. Dunning?
Yes.
Through the time that you met Dawn Dunning, you learned at some point she became acquainted with Harvey Weinstein.
Correct.
At that time, Ms. Dunning was excited about the prospect of having a connection to a well-known producer. Isn't that fair to say?
Yes.
You learned over time that Ms. Dunning knew Mr. Weinstein. She would go to Miramax and do screen tests.
I can't recall her actually going to any screen tests.
Possibly. She could have gone to do screen tests at Miramax.
Possibly, yeah.
And you yourself went to some event sponsored by Mr. Weinstein, correct?
Yes.
You got tickets to go see the producers?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember if Mr. Weinstein was there?
I shook his hand that day, yeah.
And I think you also testified, maybe you didn't. Did you go to Whoopi Goldberg's birthday with Mr. Weinstein and Dawn?
I cannot remember that.
And you told the members of the jury a night in 2004 when Ms. Dunning came home, she was upset?
Yes.
And she told you, as what the state said, there was an incident where Mr. Weinstein opened the door in a dressing gown or bathrobe?
Yes.
Do you remember talking to Ms. Dunning before she went to that meeting with Mr. Weinstein?
About what?
About the fact that she was going there to potentially sign contracts.
Yeah, I do.
Was she excited about it?
Of course.
She was excited about it because it was her dream to become an actress.
Fair to say.
And she knew she was going to meet with Harvey Weinstein.
Yes.
She did not ask you to come with her for her protection?
No.
Didn't have or show to you any fear about the fact that she was going to meet with Harvey Weinstein, did she?
No.
She did not seem upset about the fact that she was going to meet with Harvey Weinstein?
No.
Didn't tell you Mr. Weinstein ever been inappropriate to her before?
Correct.
In fact, when Ms. Dunning went to this meeting, where she came back earlier, her attitude was completely different later, right?
Yes.
She was very excited before she went?
Yes. Well, I would not say very excited. She was, yeah, looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it because this may be the culmination of her dream to be in a movie.
Right.
As her boyfriend, were you her fiancé at that point?
No.
As her boyfriend, she confided things in you?
Yes.
Trusted you?
I hope so.
You trusted her?
Yes.
Your relationship with Ms. Dunning was the type of relationship where she would tell you things, correct?
Correct.
So I want to go back again for one second to before that point when she went to Mr. Weinstein's hotel.
Uh-huh.
Excited.
Yeah.
You did not detect anything wrong with Ms. Dunning before she went there, correct?
Nothing wrong with her, no.
And Ms. Dunning never told you that before, maybe a few weeks before going to that meeting where she was going to sign a contract, that Mr. Weinstein had put his hand up her skirt, did she?
No, she never told me that.
She never told you she was afraid of Harvey Weinstein, did she?
No.
She never told you she was sexually assaulted by Harvey Weinstein before she went to sign those contracts, did she?
Correct.
She was excited to go to the hotel that day?
Yes.
When she came home, it is your testimony, she was upset, right?
Yes.
Now, when did you and Ms. Dunning stop dating?
2009, maybe.
You are aware Ms. Dunning made some movies after that time she came home from Mr. Weinstein, right?
Yeah.
Are you still friendly with Ms. Dunning?
I mean, we speak cordially and stuff like that, but I'm not constantly in contact with her.
But the fact you at one point were in a significant relationship with her, you at least know she made a few movies after that night where she came home upset, right?
I don't know about a few movies. I would say the only one I recall was one movie.
What movie was that?
I have no idea what it was called.
Thank you.
One question. Do you know if she got paid for that movie?
She did not get paid.
Again, not the strongest witness for the prosecution, you know, confirming the aftermath of something that actually isn't a crime. An indecent proposal is not a crime. And admitting that his girlfriend had failed to tell him about an actual crime by the same person earlier than this incident. In fact, it was quite a bit of legal argument whether Mr. Davies should have given evidence at all. You know, it's this whole Molyneux rule. You know, they were sort of saying a Molyneux witness is bad enough, but then a vague witness to back up a Molyneux witness is really prejudicial. But he was allowed to give evidence. But I'm not sure he did a lot of harm to Mr. Weinstein.
So then we heard from Maurizio Ferrigno, who was the manager of Cipriani's upstairs lounge. This is this lounge, we talked about it yesterday, it's this very exclusive part of the Cipriani restaurant downtown, where you know, I think it's a members only sort of situation. Yes. I think it's basically that the owner of Cipriani's, you know, has sort of special guests that get to go up there and stuff. So it's all very exclusive.
And at 11 a.m., the fire escape comes down, the metal fire escape.
Oh, yeah, they showed that.
And you go up the metal fire escape. It's all very exclusive and very, very underground, you know.
So Mr. Ferrigno that we're going to hear from
he's talking about Tarali Wolf. Another one of Harvey Weinstein's alleged victims. She was a cocktail waitress in the venue, and she says she was led upstairs by Weinstein to a darkened terrace strewn with building materials where she alleges he started masturbating in front of her. She says it was obvious what he was doing by the movement of his shirt. In the end, Mr. Ferrigno added little to the story, in my opinion, and his description of Miss Wolfe's personality, showing her to be strong-willed, dented the prosecution's theory that she was easily bullied and, you know, one of these easily manipulated victims of Weinstein's malevolence. So let's hear from Mr. Ferrigno. He's been questioned by Assistant District Attorney Megan Hast. Let's hear that.
Good morning. Where are you currently living?
I'm living on the Upper West Side in the Manhattan.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a driver for the union.
Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Italy, in a town called Genoa.
Did there come a time that you moved to New York City?
Yes, I did.
Around how old were you?
I was 22 years old.
Did you know somebody named Giuseppe Cipriani?
Yes, I do.
How do you know him?
I was working for him.
During what time period were you working for him?
Between 1996 and 2009.
What did you do for Mr. Cipriani?
I was a doorman at a restaurant called Downtown.
Directing your attention to 2004 and 2005, were those some of the years you were working for him?
Yes, I was.
What were you doing for him during that period, 2004 to 2005?
At the time, I was the manager of the Cipriani upstairs lounge.
Where was that upstairs lounge located?
It was located above Cipriani downtown, the restaurant, which was 376 West Broadway between Broome and Spring.
Can you just describe the lounge?
The lounge was an upscale private club, mostly for Mr. Cipriani and his friends. And we had membership, and it was very upscale. In the beginning, we had a lot of celebrities coming. It was a place very exclusive.
What were your duties and responsibilities there?
I was managing the front of the floor and the front of the house, meaning I was managing the restaurant floor and the staff and making sure the members, the customers, were happy.
Was there something called an owner's table in the lounge?
Yes.
Can you just describe what that was?
The owner's table was a table where the friends of the owner, or guests of the friends of the owner, they would come and see it. It was the only table facing the entire club.
Do you know somebody named Tarali Wolf?
Yes, I do, ma'am.
How do you know Tarali?
She was one of the cocktail waitresses working at the club.
And how long did you work with Tarali?
I believe she came looking for a job, and she started working since 2006.
Do you recall specifically the time period she worked with you?
I think it was between 2006 and 2008.
How long did she work with you?
I'm not sure.
Can you describe Tarali?
Yes, she was a tall model-like girl, she was very attractive and very eager to work, and she fit the profile for working as a cocktail waitress.
I'm going to show you what is in evidence as People's Exhibit 12. Do you recognize People's Exhibit 12?
Yes.
Who is in that photograph?
Tarale on the left, and then it is me.
Can you describe her personality?
Oh, she was a very bubbly. Very. She was a very nice person.
Do you know someone named Harvey Weinstein?
Yes, I do.
How do you know Harvey Weinstein?
He was a friend of the owner.
Did he come to the upstairs lounge on occasion?
He would.
Where would he sit?
Usually with Cipriani at his table.
Did you ever see Harvey Weinstein with Tarale?
Yes.
Can you describe what you recall about that?
I was going from the restaurant to the club, and I remember seeing them on the left side, having a conversation, going upstairs.
Going up the stairs?
Yes.
And do you recall who was in front going up the stairs?
I don't remember.
Did you look at Tarale as she was going up the stairs?
Briefly.
Do you recall what her demeanor was like?
I didn't see any specific demeanor.
What did you do?
I went back to the club because I have the earpiece and I have a radio on me all the time, and they would call me back and forth downstairs, so I am always on the move.
Do you recall seeing Tarale or Harvey Weinstein return to the club?
I remember, yes.
Did you have any conversation with Tarale?
No, I didn't.
You know, a brief encounter on the stairs, and, you know, the problem with this is that from Tarale's, Wolf's evidence the day before, and actually even from the prosecutor's opening statement, there was this almost cinematic scene where she was being led off to her doom by this evil man, and that the manager looked up and they locked eyes, and then the manager just, remember that, closed.
Yeah, and he closed the door.
It
appeared to be told, that story. It almost sounded like there was something kind of almost conspiratorial. Yes.
It's a classic movie scene, right, where you catch someone's eyes as you're in serious trouble, and they look at you and realize, and then they close the door. And the first rule of journalism that I have learned over 25 years or whatever is, if it sounds like a movie, that people who lie, they often lie and make it sound...
try to make a dramatic scene.
Yes, they make it like a movie because that's what they know. They've seen the movie. So they're very often, if you hear someone, one of those hoax hate crimes, if it's ever like a movie, then you know that they made it up.
But then, so then he gave evidence today and in no way confirmed all this drama, right? He just says he saw them go upstairs.
And that's it?
And that was it. He doesn't remember when it happened. He can't even remember the year. He didn't notice any change in her demeanor either when she came back down. So we went from this limited evidence of to Mr. Ferrigno being cross-examined by Damon Chironas for Harvey Weinstein. And Mr. Ferrigno was unable to tell the year or even the time of the year when he saw this, you know, her go up the stairs and all of that. And Mr. Chironas hinted that the testimony may have been prompted by an animosity between him and his old employers. There was a suggestion that perhaps that this memory had become more crystal because he'd been coached by the prosecution. So we'll hear that again, that piece of evidence. And as you'll notice, Mr. Maurizio Ferrigno is a foreign gentleman.
Yes.
And has had quite a strong accent.
Yes, he's been living in Manhattan now for, I don't know, 40 years. And boy, he has not lost his accent.
Well, we know plenty of Irish people who are like that.
Exactly. Some of them sitting around this table.
Indeed.
So I just wanted to say, if you like what we do here, we need help. We're asking for your funding and your help.
And it's tax deductible. We have a 501c3, and it's the unreportedstorysociety.com.
So
unreportedstorysociety.com. Please
give what you can. Thank you. So let's hear Damon Chironas question Maurizio Ferrigno about his...
what he remembers about that supposedly dramatic evening.
Mr. Ferrigno, were you fired from Cipriani's?
I beg your pardon?
Were you fired from Cipriani's?
I was let go.
Why were you let go?
They hired a new manager, new management. They did renovation and the new management came in.
No other reason?
A friend of the owner.
No accusations were made against you?
No.
Okay. Now, you told the members of the jury that Miss Wolf started working at Cipriani's in 2006, right?
I think, yes.
Until 2008?
I believe so.
And how long did you work at Cipriani's for?
Oh, for since we opened the club in 2003. From 2003 to 2009.
You talked about the upstairs portion of Cipriani's. Was it also known as the place where people would go to hook up at Cipriani's?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir.
Now, you testified that you remember one incident where Mr. Weinstein and Miss Wolf went up a flight of stairs, right?
Excuse me?
They went upstairs.
Yes.
When was that?
I don't remember a specific period.
What year was it?
I don't know the exact time.
What time of year was it? Was it summer? Was it fall?
I don't recall.
What was Mr. Weinstein wearing?
A suit.
Are you guessing or are you saying it was a suit?
I am saying it usually a suit.
Usually a suit. Do you remember specifically if he was wearing a suit the day you saw him walk up the stairs with Miss Wolf?
No, sir.
What was Miss Wolf wearing?
Cocktail waitress attire.
Would she wear that all the time when she worked there?
That's correct.
And what were you doing at the time when you saw Mr. Weinstein and Miss Wolf walk up the flight of stairs?
I was going to the restaurant throughout. You have to go from the restaurant, you go inside of the club.
And there was nothing unusual about that that struck you in your mind?
Not at the time.
Okay. And yet, 15 years later, you talked to the DA in this case, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you hadn't talked to anybody about that going up the stairs before the DA reached out to you in November of last year, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And 15 years later, you remember that you saw Mr. Weinstein and Miss Wolf walk up the stairs. Is that what you were telling this jury?
Yes.
Okay. And when you sat down to talk with the DA, they told you that they wanted to ask you questions about Miss Wolf, didn't they?
Yes.
They told you that they wanted to ask you about questions with Miss Wolf and Mr. Weinstein, right?
That's correct.
And they told you that Miss Wolf had, they had said that she went upstairs with Mr. Weinstein, didn't they?
Yes.
And it was then, was it these prosecutors here?
That's correct.
It was when these prosecutors here told you that Miss Wolf had said she was upstairs with Mr. Weinstein that you remembered you saw it, right?
Yes.
Mr. Ferrigno, you met with the prosecutors in November of 2019.
That's correct.
When you met with them, they told you that Miss Wolf was making an allegation that her and Mr. Weinstein went upstairs at Cipriani's, correct?
Yes.
It was after they told you that that you said, oh, I remember seeing that happen, correct?
Yes.
Only. Did they tell you anything else about what Miss Wolf said happened when they were upstairs?
No, sir.
And isn't it true that when you first talked to them in November of 2019, you didn't remember that? Isn't that true?
No.
They had to jog your memory, didn't they? Didn't they?
No.
So you just 15 years after the fact remembered this random walk up a flight of stairs, right?
It wasn't unusual two people to have a conversation will go up there.
I am not asking you about what's your usual or unusual. You just testified to the jury. You specifically remember Mr. Weinstein walking up a flight of stairs with Miss Wolf, correct?
Correct.
Do you even remember that?
Yes.
And you remembered of that after they told you Miss Wolf was making that allegation, correct?
Yes.
So then Mr. Ferrigno was asked about Miss Wolf's personality. And, you know, this brings up again this recurring sort of theme through the trial. You know, part of the prosecution strategy is that Mr. Weinstein was a predator preying on the vulnerable. And in fact, he's actually charged with being a sexual predator, a charge that could land him in prison for the rest of his life. Well, that's not really how Mr. Ferrigno remembers Miss Wolf. She was well capable, apparently, of standing up for herself and others. So we're going to hear from Mr. Ferrigno right now describe to Damon Sharonis how she lost her job, actually, at the club.
For standing up for others.
Let's hear that now.
And you talked about Ms. Wolf being a sweet person, right?
Yes.
Ms. Wolf was fired from Cipriani's, correct?
I believe she was working at Cipriani's.
At some point, she was fired, though, right?
She was taken off the schedule.
Do you remember getting into an argument with Ms. Wolf because she tried to intervene on behalf of one of her friends who had gotten into a fight at Cipriani's?
Yes.
And her friend got into a fight at Cipriani's and Ms. Wolf wouldn't stand for it. She got upset.
That's correct.
And she confronted you, didn't she?
Yes.
She wasn't a wallflower, was she? She wasn't someone who wouldn't stick up for herself.
She was upset.
Okay. And when she was upset, she said something to you.
Yes.
She said she wasn't going to stand for that, didn't she?
Yes.
And her friend got into a fight at Cipriani, and Ms. Wolf wouldn't stand for it. She got upset?
Yes.
She spoke up about it, didn't she?
She did, yes.
And she had no problem speaking up to you about something like that, did she?
No.
And you are a big guy, aren't you?
It doesn't matter.
Did she get in your face about it?
She did. She was upset about some instance, the episode, whatever happened between her and another girl.
She vocalized that to you, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
She did, didn't she?
Yes.
And she vocalized it in a way where she raised her voice.
Yes.
Where she got mad, right?
Yes.
And it was because of that that she no longer works at Cipriani's, am I right?
No, she did work after that.
There was a break, though, in between the time that she got upset, walked out, and then came back, correct?
Yes.
So not a great day for either side, really, today. And I think that's probably why they dispensed with these witnesses so quickly and it ended at lunchtime.
Before lunchtime,
I guess. Yeah, so kind of a 0-0 kind of score there.
And I wonder, in a 0-0 score, who wins, you know? You would think that Harvey Weinstein would win, but, you know, there's a lot of cumulative evidence, not cumulative witnesses, and maybe, you know, maybe that 0-0 is not what he needs to get a few wins. I mean, to be honest, there were a few other witnesses today. Monica Mickelson, who was there for, she gave evidence for about 15 minutes. She was the casting director for the movie Pulse, which Tarali Wolf said Weinstein had used as bait to attract her to his apartment where he raped her. Miss Mickelson said the movie was actually being produced by Harvey's brother Bob, and that he had no role in casting actors for that movie. However, she was forced to agree under cross-examination. She'd no idea how the two brothers worked together, whether Bob would accept recommendations from Harvey, and she agreed. It was often the case that loads of people would recommend actors to her from all walks of life, and you know, even other actors, other directors. Just, you would get recommendations coming saying he'd be really good or she'd be really good. So
no points scored there on that one.
You know, the fact that Harvey was talking to someone, she's even forced to admit that sometimes you would screen test an actress for one role but offer her another. So again, no points scored there. Then they called a lawyer, Deb Sen, from the law firm Bowes Schiller, and he confirmed that on Weinstein's behalf, they had hired this mysterious Israeli company called Black Cube, and I use mysterious in inverted commas, to investigate women who were making sexual allegations against Harvey Weinstein. And this was before all the reports came out in the New Yorker and the New York Times. But again, didn't do much for me. I think the jury will agree you're perfectly allowed, it's perfectly acceptable to legally investigate people who are making serious allegations about you. And I don't think anyone there suggested that
they'd done anything illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, quite a short day, which was kind of great. But tomorrow is going to be a really big day. Tomorrow we're going to hear from the substantial accuser, which is Jessica Mann. Mm-hmm. So the two, in the end, there are all these other witnesses, but the ones that really count, the only two that really count, are the ones that are accusing him of rape and one of sexual assault, and that's Jessica Mann and Miriam Haley.
Yeah, so
but tomorrow is Jessica Mann.
Yeah, so Miriam Haley and Jessica Mann, they're the only ones he's been criminally charged with criminally assaulting them. There are four other accounts of sexual assault, but they're to make up this wider predatory charge, which, you know, is a controversial charge. So it's the prosecution need to score big tomorrow because, you know, this is a major witness, this is a major accuser.
And you'll remember we talked about Jessica Mann before. So she's described as from a dairy farm in Washington. They mentioned this dairy farm a lot, and also that she was brought up in the evangelical church, which I think they mean, I don't think she was actually brought up in the actual church, but they mentioned that a lot. And I think it's probably, you know, you can imagine that that's actually trying to characterize her in a very specifically innocent kind of way.
The Sound of Music kind of thing.
But we've had a kind of a preview, in the opening statements of things that have been discovered in discovery about Jessica Mann, there's a lot there, and it's going to be interesting. I think cross-examination is going to be very interesting of Jessica Mann. Obviously, you know, the prosecution understand and know that, you know, there is this correspondence, this sizable amount of correspondence, you know, from her to Harvey Weinstein, where she finishes all her emails saying lots of love, where she wanted him to meet her mother and all of this sort of stuff. So, you know, we're going to hear all that.
She describes herself as his casual boyfriend. Now, we heard that in opening argument. And funny, we've heard some things in opening argument that didn't then come out during evidence. So you can never believe an opening argument. Basically, they can say what they want, but it's all about evidence and it's all about testimony. And talking of testimony, we're going to have a very special guest in the podcast studio on Tuesday. We won't say who it is. We'll tell you tomorrow who it is. But it's someone very close to the Weinstein camp who's in court every day. And they're going to tell us what the thinking is in the Weinstein camp and perhaps what the thinking is with Harvey Weinstein. So let's be sure to tune in on Tuesday. And we hope later on the podcast to have people close to the prosecution camp or close to the other side to hear how they feel the case is going. You know, we really want this to be a fair podcast looking at all sides. People have criticized us for being skeptical, I see on the comments, and please do go and rate us and leave a comment yourself. But as journalists, that's what we got to do. We got to be skeptical. We got to stand back from the mob and ask, you know, where's the evidence for this? Where's the truth for this? So we're skeptical. And of course, we're only hearing the prosecution case now, so we're skeptical of the prosecution case. When the defense case comes, we're going to be equally skeptical of that as well. So that's what we do. That's what journalists do. If you're reading journalism that's not skeptical, and there's a lot of non-skeptical journalism about this case, well, then it's not real journalism. It's advocacy, and you're entitled to read it. But don't kid yourself that you're getting the full story. You get the full story on the Harvey Weinstein trial, unfiltered. And we're going to bring it to you every day, rain, hail, or shine. So please tune in, rate us, and if you want to support us, go to theunreportedstoriesociety.com.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Today's podcast is produced by Unreported Story Society and Magdalena Cicada and Raquel Lehrman of Theater Planners. Written and presented by Phelim McAleer and Anne McElhaney. Directed by Kif Scholl. Megan Hast is played by Kristen Connors. Maurizio Ferrigno is played by Thomas Fisella. Lincoln Davies is played by Trevor Lesueur. And Damon Sharonis is played by David Stanbraugh. Edited by Mark Aramian. Engineered by Mark De La Fuente.